CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. CityTalk 105.9.
Hello and welcome to City Talk Business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm the chairman of the independent private sector lobby group and business networking club Downtown Liverpool in Business, and every Sunday I'll be taking a look at some of the week's business news and talking to some key personalities, decision makers and entrepreneurs who work in and influence Liverpool and the wider Northwest region. This week I'm focusing on the support, help and guidance that a key regional organisation, BusinessLink, is offering to the private sector in these challenging economic times. Whether it's access to finance, negotiation with your bank, or a marketing strategy that you need, BusinessLink may be the people you have to talk to. I'll also be bringing you the latest on Liverpool's campaign to bring hundreds of Whitehall jobs to our city. All of that later. First, I'm joined in the studio by local entrepreneur Tony Caldera. Tony is the owner-manager of one of the UK's leading manufacturing companies and owns the biggest cushion manufacturing plant in China. He also has a base in Knowsley, and last year he expanded his business empire when he bought a retail chain. In his spare time, if he has any, Tony, who lives here in the city centre, is the chairman of the local Conservative Association. Tony, welcome.
Hi, Frank.
Just mention your role within the local Conservative Association. Last week we had Esther McVeigh, Dougal Paver and David Wade-Smith in the studio talking about what a Tory government may mean to Liverpool. You had Chris Grayling in the city earlier in the week. I believe that visit went well.
Yes, it was a very good visit, thanks, Frank. We got through an awful lot in the day, as well as the usual media. Chris was in and doing some stuff for City Talk Breakfast, and also did some stuff for other radio stations and the Post and Echo as well. But we managed to get an awful lot of media coverage from him. He's also on today's politics show. The BBC followed us around for the whole day, which is really good because Chris had some very interesting visits. He dealt with the Merseyside business community in the maritime sector. There was a very interesting meeting there in the city centre. And then we also did a couple of very interesting visits in the community as well. We went to the Frontline Church in Wavertree and saw some of the work that they were doing in some of the disadvantaged areas of Toxteth. And then we went to a very interesting business on Great Homer Street called Mersey Strides, which is a voluntary sector group which actually provides work and provides employment and skills and training for some of the unfortunate young men who've perhaps got on the wrong side of the law and need to get back on side again.
Chris Grayling's brief, as well as being the Shadow Home Secretary, he's got this interesting role in terms of looking after Merseyside, if you like, finding out a lot about Liverpool, and he spent a significant amount of time in the city and in the surrounding areas, hasn't it?
Yeah, Chris has been Shadow Minister for Merseyside for over 3 years now, and one of the reasons that David Cameron and Chris Grayling were looking to look at this kind of role was because it was very important that should there be a Conservative government after May, then, you know, it's very important that Liverpool and the Conservative Party don't fall out in the same way that they did in the 1980s. It's not in the advantage. It's not to the advantage of the Conservative Party or Liverpool. We don't want to see the mistakes. It was bad for the Conservative Party and it was also bad for the city. But some of the things that are also important in this region is this area, not just Liverpool as a city, but Liverpool city region. On either side of the Mersey, there are 10 marginal seats which could well decide the fate of who actually goes into number 10. So if the area is properly worked and looked after, if the Conservatives can get their message across on both sides of the Mersey, then that could actually play a significant role as to whether David Cameron will enter number 10 Downing Street later in the year.
I mean, one of the things we touched on, and you've just referred to it yourself, was the last time there was a Conservative administration, we had a Labour council in control in Liverpool, and of course it wasn't the easiest of relationships, to put it mildly. There's a possibility that will be the same scenario this time around, come May. Joe Anderson was on the show last week as well, leader of Liverpool Labour Party. And Joe was saying basically that he welcomed the opportunity that may occur should we have a Conservative administration in terms of this new role that's being considered for a minister for Merseyside.
That's right. I think, you know, David Cameron's committed to having city ministers should the Conservative government be elected. You know, whether that's Chris Grayling or not, I would hope so, given the work that he's done. But you know, there are other potential candidates in the reckoning as well. But Chris and Joe and myself, to a lesser extent, we've got good relationships. We understand what's going on. You know, Chris and Joe have spoken on numerous issues in the last 2 or 3 years, and they have a good working relationship. In fairness to Joe Anderson as well, he also doesn't want the same kind of scenario should the Labour Party have a very good day on May the 6th and take control of the City Council. The last thing that he wants is to, you know, be at loggerheads from day one with a potential Conservative government as well. So the important thing is that both sides are much more responsible about it. There's a lot less of the partisan hoo-ha that went on in the 1980s, because that would only damage Liverpool. Both sides can see that, and that can only be a good thing for the city.
Absolutely. Well, Tony, just moving on now to your business interests, and you are regarded, rightly so, as one of the leading entrepreneurs, certainly to come out of Merseyside over the past decade or so. And I never fail to be fascinated by your story and how you got into business and the success that's followed.
No, it's very nice thing for you to say, Frank. And of course, when Downtown Liverpool in Business suggested that I was their Entrepreneur of the Year 2 years ago, then that was also very nice as well. So I appreciate that. But yes, there is an absolutely fascinating story behind Caldera Limited and its growth. For those of you who haven't heard the story, the business actually started on a market stall in Great Homer Street back in the late 80s. And once I'd left university in 1991, we set up a very small manufacturing unit in St. Helens and started to supply products and mainly cushions and some throws and bits and pieces to some of the local independent retailers. From there, the business grew very rapidly, and within 10 years, we'd become the largest cushion business in the UK. And we had two factories here on Merseyside and employed over 150 people. And that was before the introduction of China, of course.
So from a market stall in Great Homer Street, basically, you've developed this fantastic worldwide business.
Yeah, which is why there's a lot of people who cite the Caldera story as a good one and an inspirational one, because what it does show is that there are a lot of small and medium-sized businesses on Merseyside that can actually grow and become successful and global players. Because once we actually started to work with China from 2003 and 2004, we then expanded over in China and built a Chinese factory. It was a very interesting, shall we say, and challenging time while we actually got used to Chinese business and culture and the way that that works. And Channel 4 followed us around while we built the factory. But in the last few years, the Chinese business has now grown to be even bigger than that in the UK. And we export to over 20 countries. And, you know, we've got over nearly 250 staff now in the Chinese factory as well. So the UK business is still thriving. We still had our best quarter in the last quarter of 2009. And the Chinese business is also going very, very well. So even before we started to look at the retail side of things, the cushion business had grown significantly.
Mm. What made you decide that you wanted to start your own business? Because, you know, for somebody who is of a young age, was basically becoming your own boss always in your mind from school, or was it just something that evolved through the work that you were doing on Great Homer Street Market?
Yeah, well, some people say that entrepreneurs are born, and some people say that entrepreneurs are taught. And I think I was definitely a born entrepreneur. I knew that I was always going to be my own boss. I did go to university. I have got an economics and politics degree that I got between 1988 and 1991, which shows us how old I am. So please ignore that. I should have lied about that one, shouldn't I, Frank? But I'm not going to get away with that. But I always knew that when I left university, I had two choices. It was either go into politics and political research, or it was to start my own business. And what I decided to do was to start my own company. My mother and two sisters, we all grew up together in sort of various council houses in St. Helens, and it was important that I gave something back to the family that had helped bring me up in quite difficult circumstances. So we managed to build up the family business very, very quickly in the beginning. And then after 2 or 3 years, when the family took a back seat and I took over, it just went from strength to strength and still goes strong today. I mean, in 2008, we opened up Caldera USA as well. So we've now even got a US operation too. Sounds very good, because we have a suite on Fifth Avenue, which sounds really cool when you're out in the news bar on a Saturday night. It's always a good line. But jokes aside, it's an important stage, because what we now do is sell products that are made on Merseyside to the US and Canadian market, as well as to other markets around the world.
Mm. How did you get into the Chinese market specifically?
Well, in 2005, China was admitted to the World Trade Organization, which meant that the gloves were off and the tariffs came down. And unfortunately for us, in terms of UK manufacture, we just couldn't physically compete. Chinese labour was a tenth of the cost of labour, even here on Merseyside. And it was, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. We had no choice to do it. Our customers would have deserted us had we done that, because they were looking at Chinese direct manufacture. So what we ended up doing with the Chinese operation is taking things on a step-by-step basis. We started off, first of all, buying fabrics, which were made over here. And then as time went by, more and more of the manufacturing operation moved to China, because people sometimes think that, you know, you can just start in China and everything's going to be hunky-dory straight away. But it takes time to build relationships with key people, with key suppliers, and it's not something that can happen overnight.
It's a tough market to crack, isn't it? I spent some time in China 2003-2004 time, first of all with a business delegation, and secondly with Everton Football Club. And what struck me was the Chinese appetite for building personal relationships. And you've really got to work it that hard if you're going to be successful in that country, haven't you?
That's true, Frank, exactly right. If you try and treat a Chinese business partner as an unequal, or you don't spend the time creating that relationship, then there's a very good chance that your Chinese operation will fall flat on its face. The important things in China are to work hard with those people and to show them that you're genuine and show them that you really mean business. Mm. And if that happens, then the best Chinese business people are absolutely outstanding partners and colleagues to do business with. If you don't work on those relationships, then there's a chance that you could end up coming home losing your shirt. So you have to be very, very careful that you do your homework and you end up with the right people.
Mm. Now, of course, Liverpool is twinned with Shanghai. I've often thought in the past we've not made enough of that particular partnership, but this year we're involved as a city in the Shanghai Expo. In fact, we're the only UK city that's been invited to participate, other than London, who subsequently decided not to take part. So it's a fantastic showcase for Liverpool. What do you think businesses who are taking part in that particular venture could expect to get out of the initiative that Liverpool City Council, Northwest Development Agency and others are supporting?
Well, the first and the most important opportunity is for the city and the city region itself, because China's fast-growing economy is producing a tremendous number of new middle-class consumers who can not only buy products and goods and, of course, services that are provided here in Merseyside, but they can also visit. There are some incredible opportunities for this region. For example, there's an outrageous statistic that says that there are more Chinese students who want to study in British universities than there are places in British universities, which is quite incredible when you think about it. You know, there's a whole industry there just waiting to happen. Again, when you look at the financial services industry, although in recent times that's been slated for various and often quite right reasons, Britain is still a leader in financial services, and this city is one of the most, one of the strongest cities in that area outside of London, so we can use that sector to start potentially getting some Chinese inward investment. And the Chinese government and some of the government-owned companies have tremendous amounts of money to invest. Mm. They're looking to invest the money. You know, there's over $2 trillion worth of reserves in the Chinese central bank, and some of these state-owned firms are armed to the teeth with cash, ready to make acquisitions and ready to invest. And Shanghai 2010 gives Liverpool and the region an opportunity to actually attract some of that investment, which really shouldn't be underestimated. For the Chinese, the fact that we will be the only British city in Shanghai at the Expo will really mean a lot for Liverpool's face, which is, again, hugely important in Chinese business and Chinese business culture. So they will see Liverpool as a premier destination in Europe in which to invest, a premier destination in which students can come and learn English. Although it will be funny, it's always great when you hear a Chinese student with a Scouse accent. That always gets a good giggle. It's great stuff. And also, they will look at the likes of, you mentioned Everton Football Club and Liverpool Football Club, and, you know, some of our musical heritage. And it's not just a question of them buying cushions and buying business services, but, you know, there are a lot of good Merseyside products and services that we can offer to the Chinese market. And not only to the Chinese market, it is a showcase for the rest of the world too. So definitely something that's welcomed, something that local businesses should have a serious look at. And following a couple of discussions that I've had, one with the Chinese business community and one that was organised by the Chamber of Commerce at the arena a few weeks ago, I found that the appetite is there, the interest is there. People are interested in China. I'm sure when we talk about some of the Chinese economic statistics in a few minutes, it's an incredible opportunity. Liverpool has this unique relationship with Shanghai and the fact that it's our sister city. Shanghai is an absolutely amazing city. I don't know if anybody's ever gone and been to Shanghai. You go into Shanghai down the Bund and, you know, the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. It's absolutely electric. It's an amazing place. So people should get out there, take advantage of it, and let's hope that it brings some good to the city.
Mm. You mentioned there, Tony, about the speed with which China's economy is growing at the moment. I think it's the fastest growing economy on the planet as we speak today. What risks are there in terms of doing business in China, and, you know, conversely, what opportunities are there? Because as someone who's been there now for, what, nearly enough 10 years, isn't it?
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time over there now. So
you must sort of know the pros and cons.
That's right. I mean, the economic statistics are absolutely staggering. Last week it came out that the Chinese economy expanded by 8.7%, which is probably as much economic growth as happened in the rest of the world put together. We don't know the rest of the statistics, but it can't be far off. And at the moment, our Chinese factory is absolutely booming. We've never been busier. And again, some of the official statistics are actually echoing that as well, because apparently China grew by over 10% in the last quarter. Now, when you think that Britain is still technically in recession, although hopefully we'll come out of recession soon, the fact that the Chinese economy has grown by 10% in one quarter is absolutely phenomenal. Mm. You can't really get your head around it when you look at the current economic circumstances that are around in this country. But there is so much investment going on. There's so much belief in China. Everybody's first job wish is to be their own boss. Everybody wants to be Laoban. That's the important thing. In this country, entrepreneurship and starting your own business isn't necessarily the first choice of most people. In China, it is. So what you're going to have is China overtaking Japan and becoming the second biggest economy in the world soon, and a whole army of Chinese entrepreneurs looking to come forward to start their own businesses and to expand not only into China, but into the UK and into the West as well.
Mm. So, sorry, Tony, to interrupt. Do you think that the UK is well placed to take advantage of that market? There does seem to be a good relationship developing, not just with this city, but the UK generally and the Chinese government and business community beyond that.
Definitely. The UK has an excellent opportunity to deal with China. In China, British is cool. You know, everybody knows where Liverpool is. You know, Steven Gerrard, very good player. You know, they know who Liverpool, what Liverpool is all about, and they know a little bit about the city. And they want to do business with this country. They think that, you know, Britain is a good, cool country that they want to do it. Liverpool has that unique opportunity within the UK. Of course, it would be great. I'd like to personally see the Chinese community in Liverpool even expand its links with China. It's got an even better position than most. When I spoke to the Chinese business community a few weeks back, the fact that they have similar language, although not always the same, although most people don't know, but similar languages to most of China, links and connections over there. They're in a fantastic position to be almost a bridge between the two countries and the two cultures and the two economies. Yeah. And I hope that the Chinese community in Liverpool also get involved with Shanghai 2010 and can make the most of that.
Mm. I think it is a great opportunity for the business community. And we've got Steve Broomhead in, who's the chief executive of the development agency, next week. And hopefully he'll tell us a bit more about what those opportunities are. Just moving away from your Chinese operation, Tony, last year you acquired a retail interest. What was your thinking behind that? I think most people last year were trying to sell things, not buy things.
Well, I've got a very simple theory about businesses. You buy at the bottom and you sell at the top. You know, if things are cheap, then buy them. When you hear that gold hits a record price, then sell what gold you've got. When shares are as low as they've been for the last 10 years, then buy them. It's not rocket science. You don't need to be a Philip Green or Bill Gates or whatever to work that kind of thing out. But we were lucky in the fact that this particular operation had hit on hard times. Of course, it wasn't lucky for the staff that unfortunately didn't make it forward. But from a business perspective, there was this opportunity where the management of the business, which is called Fabric Warehouse, and the stores are mainly in the south of England, had lost the way a little bit. And we ended up acquiring 14 of the stores that were that were within the business and all the stocks and the deal that came with it. But it's been good for this area because, of course, we've moved the head office up to Knowsley, which is now within our cushion factory site on Knowsley, on the business park. So we've brought a few more jobs to Knowsley. And who knows, the retail chain's been difficult. Of course, the timing was a little bit unfortunate, buying a business just before the credit crunch really came onto the scene and was really a factor. But we've managed to turn the business around, and we're hoping that we can take the business forward and expand the business organically and potentially even acquire further businesses in the new year, because we have just set up a holding company. So the four Caldera businesses are all under one umbrella now, and should we decide to take on more businesses, then we have the vehicle and everything in place to do it, because 2010 will be an opportunity to acquire businesses. So for progressive entrepreneurial businesses in Merseyside, if they can get hold of the cash, which of course is always the key thing at the moment, should look at some of the opportunities that are around, because there are plenty of them.
Mm. You talk about cash and cash flow, and obviously you've been able to get through this difficult period. What are you finding relationships with banks like at the moment as a businessman?
It's quite strange. Caldera is lucky. We've got a good track record. We've got a very strong balance sheet. The money that we've earned in the past, we've reinvested in the business. So, you know, we're not in any kind of financial trouble. But even when we were looking at certain things and looking at certain opportunities, some of the attitudes from some of the banks, and not just one or two, but several, was quite astonishing, really. Despite the fact that, for example, Tony Caldera has won every entrepreneurial award this side of the M6, still, it was still a question of, actually, well, we're still not sure about this. We still are looking at different things, and we need to check this with the credit committee. And in the end, some of the proposals that we had weren't turned down flatly, but we were advised strongly not to do it. And I'm thinking, if a company that's as relatively successful as Caldera can't get the funds, you know, heaven help some of the firms that are perhaps on the brink and not quite as strong and as experienced as we are. Mm. So I think really what we need, without sounding too political, is we need a really good loan guarantee scheme that will actually give the banks a little bit of comfort, because they're in between a rock and a hard place as well. They've got a need to strengthen their balance sheets and to make sure that we don't end up in the position where the banks could nearly go bust, because of course that's not an option for the economy. That can't happen at any cost. But by the same token, we've still got small business, medium-sized business, especially in this part of the world, that is really hungry for cash, not only just to grow and expand, but just for day-to-day cash flow as well. So the banks are in a rock and a hard place, but really we need some kind of answer to make sure that small business and medium-sized business, especially on Merseyside, doesn't run out of cash, because that's huge.
This is Frank McKenna, City Talks Business, with Tony Caldera today. And we've explored the possibility of a Conservative government and what that would mean to Liverpool. We've looked at the opportunities around Shanghai Expo 2010, which Liverpool is a big player in. Tony's lots of business interests around the Chinese market. And now we're talking about the financial state of businesses and banks' attitudes in particular. The thing that concerns me at the moment, Tony, as far as the financial institutions are concerned, is they've had this massive amount of cash pumped into them. And of course, you would have expected them to replenish their own balance sheets first. But my fear is that they're going to become too risk averse. They've gone from one extreme to the other, if you like, back in absolutely crackers schemes, to now talking to people like yourself, who, as you say, has got a very, very good track record in terms of spotting an opportunity, going for it and delivering, being very, very cautious about anything they invest in. If that continues, then we're not going to be able to grow our way out of this recession, are we?
That's very true. And I think ultimately we've got to make sure that banks have the cash available, because if they don't have the cash available, we can't grow as an economy. And it will be absolutely disastrous for this region, because there is a strong financial services sector within Liverpool. A lot of people in the city don't realise how strong financial services are in the city. You know, it's a very key part of the local economy. And we need those people to actually get behind the rest of the economy and almost anchor it. Because if that doesn't happen, you know, we won't have the tools, we won't have the building blocks, because at the moment, cash is king. Yeah. The businesses with the cash are the ones who can see and take the opportunities. Yeah. So let's just hope that we can get the cash to the small businesses and that banks do start to lend again. Yeah. They have a difficult position, but ultimately, the bigger economy is more important. And, you know, if if that doesn't happen, then we're going to see more unemployment, whichever government takes office in sort of May or June or whenever after the general election is. But we just need the banks to start lending money again. Whenever, for example, going back to the politics, when Chris Grayling and I are around visiting people in the business community, and you know better than anybody yourself, Frank, with your experiences with downtown Liverpool in business, that's the biggest concern of businesses at the moment. Mm. They can't get the cash. And if they can't get the cash, they can't do the business. It's as simple as that.
Mm. You mentioned before that when things are tough, then there is a chance for people like yourself to actually spot businesses that may be in trouble but can certainly be turned around and recovered. And you've done that with this retail outfit that you're now involved in. Would Caldera consider going into other sectors, or are you fairly secure in terms of thinking, well, I know retail because of the manufacturing side of things, there's a logical link there? Would you think, well, actually, I wouldn't mind having a look at something else, something totally different from what I've done before?
Yeah, I mean, you never know. Fabric Warehouse did give Caldera Limited an opportunity to be vertical. You're almost going from your own mill and factory in China all the way to the high street, high streets around the south of England, which is a great opportunity. But I think you can't rule anything out, because there are such good opportunities around that, and there are so many companies that are unfortunately are in cash flow, are having cash flow difficulties, that some companies are having to sell out, which isn't a good thing necessarily for those people. But again, for the entrepreneurial types within the city, you know, have a look at those opportunities. Caldera would look at those opportunities if they came around. Mm. So we need to look at it instead of just talking about doom and gloom. Let's look at the opportunities rather than the threats. Let's look at the chances that we have to actually, you know, together grow the economy of Merseyside and take it forward and start to compete not only with the rest of the United Kingdom but globally. Let's look at the opportunities that are out there, because there are plenty.
Mm. Where is Liverpool as a city, do you think, business-wise now? Again, something that's been touched on last week was the fact that, you know, 20 years ago, Liverpool was seen as a bit of a basket case. And now, over the past decade in particular, all the regeneration that's taken place in the city centre, our reputation does seem to have improved, doesn't it?
I agree. I think Liverpool is a great city. You know, there's an awful lot to offer. Some of the investment that's come into the city from the likes of Peel Holdings, from the likes of Grosvenor, you know, some incredible investments that have come in. And again, mainly from the private sector. That's the important thing that's happened in the last few years, is the private sector has started to believe in Liverpool again. And as a result of that, if we can encourage more inward investment, and again, Shanghai 2010 is a classic example of opportunities where we can do that, then that would be really, really beneficial for the city. The city of Liverpool as a business sector, you only have to drive down the waterfront to find out that we have, you know, a global perspective. We have a World Heritage site on the docks. We have great connections with the northwest of England and the rest of the UK. The city has an awful lot to offer. We still have our problems, of course, in some of the surrounding areas of the city centre, and there's still an awful lot of work to be done from a political perspective. But from a business perspective, the image of Liverpool has improved. And what's been very good as well in the last 10 years or so has been the way that a lot of the business community has got together. Organisations, dare I say it, like Downtown Liverpool in Business, have made a big difference in bringing the business community together, helping them not only to trade with each other, but to actually send each other to different opportunities and to give each other the chance to work together.
Well, on that note, Tony, very positive one. We'll just take a break. This is City Talks Business with Frank McKenna, and we'll be back very soon.
Downtown Liverpool in Business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
I'm joined today by Tony Caldera of Caldera Limited, and we've just been having a conversation about all things China, how Liverpool has progressed in the last decade. What does 2010 hold for you, Tony, and for the wider economy generally, do you think?
Well, 2010 is going to be a very busy year, especially the first half of it for myself personally, with the interests in the business and the politics. Of course, on a political side, the general election has to happen within the first half of 2010. As the chairman of the Conservative Party in Liverpool, we've just selected all our candidates, and a lot of them are good local candidates who hopefully will fight a good election fight. And finally, Liverpool has, you know, a Conservative Party that has local candidates in place in plenty of time. The Conservative Party in Liverpool is ready, and that's going to take up an awful lot of my time in the first half of 2010. From a business perspective, I'm hoping that all four Caldeva businesses, both in the UK, in the cushion sector, in China, in the state and in the retail area, will all grow organically. We think that all four businesses can grow, although I must confess that the first few weeks of January with the snow and all the problems, you know, we've had a very bad start to the year, as has a lot of retail and retail supply chain. So we are playing catch up at the moment. But overall, I'm hoping that the economic conditions will improve. I think the economy will grow, I think probably by about 2%. And with a little bit of luck, we'll have a change of government and a change of fortunes in the economy in the region. But I'm positive, and I believe that Liverpool will come through this recession strongly, and that this whole region will have a very bright future once we have a change of government and a change of luck with the economy.
Yeah, notice you mentioned the city of Liverpool there, Tony, and you didn't say Liverpool Football Club would come through the recession, but we'll leave that one for another day. Thanks very much for joining me in the studio, and I'll see you again soon.
Thanks very much, Frank.
This is Downtown Liverpool in Business on City Talk 105.9.
I'm joined now by Ashley Moore, the MD of 30 Pall Mall, who are looking to develop some space for potentially the relocation of some civil service jobs from London into Liverpool. Some of you may remember that last year, Downtown Liverpool, in association with Aurora Media, launched a campaign to suggest that Liverpool ought to be one of the main cities considered for such a relocation, which could bring literally hundreds of jobs into the city. Ashley's now going to tell me how he's getting on in terms of the negotiations with some of the agencies around the city, including Liverpool Vision, and also in terms of where they're up to with that particular development. Ashley, this is something that you've been working on for some time now. Can you tell me what the latest is as far as that's concerned?
Yes, thanks very much. We've been working this project for 5 years and actually acquired this site 3.5 years ago. We recently gained planning permission for the development, which is 238,000 square feet in a striking building on the edge of the main Pall Mall site, and we're very excited about it.
When this first came about in terms of the potential for the relocation of civil service jobs, I think it's fair to say that Liverpool wasn't even in the running. I know that you've had some discussions with council officials and indeed with Liverpool Vision. Do you think that situation has changed now and Liverpool does indeed have a chance of presenting a case whereby the government do consider this city as a potential house or new home, I should say, funds for some civil service jobs?
Yes, I believe that. I think everybody in Liverpool is united in the desire to see jobs relocated out of London to Liverpool rather than anywhere else. And discussions with various agencies and officials that we've had greatly encourages me that Liverpool not only have a fantastic opportunity in the Pall Mall site, but are determined to promote that opportunity.
And what do you think the advantages of this particular location are?
This particular location is on the edge of the city centre. It has already been the subject of much work and in fact is master planned for the development of up to 1.5 million square feet of space. And moreover, half the site is already owned by the NWDA. So that ticks a lot of boxes.
And planning permission's already been granted?
No, I believe it was an outline that was put to the planners. It's not fully developed or indeed has detailed planning permission, but it's well on the way. And I understand that our competition, indeed the Manchester site, Mayfield, is much further behind in this process than we are.
Right. Is there anything the Liverpool business community generally could do to support this particular application?
I think Liverpool has to get behind this and at the minute the work that is ongoing is to pull the information together on this site, make it into a cohesive message and a brand which can be used to promote the opportunity around the world during the course of the year. And I think once that information is in the public domain, that's something that people can unite behind.
Okay. Now I know Phil Wallace, the Minister for the North West Region, has visited the site. Any feedback from him?
Yes, we were very encouraged by that. He was impressed by the site and has said, and we are hopeful that he will return to Liverpool to get more details on that. But as Minister for the North West, he sees it as a real opportunity.
Now, of course, there is a general election looming. In fact, one of the things we're looking at the today on the programme is the potential of a Conservative government. Has there been any contact with shadow ministers?
Yes, there has. Shadow Minister Grayling has been contacted, and representatives have met with him on several occasions, and we believe that he is briefed on the opportunity in Liverpool, and we're alive to the fact that there may be a change of government, and we won't let that affect the prospects for this site.
Okay. It seems to me then that perhaps Liverpool did start somewhere behind the game here in terms of where we were alongside our competitors, particularly Manchester. But very quickly we've caught up, and perhaps now we have an offer which is potentially more advantageous.
I don't think there's any doubt that the Liverpool offer is much more deliverable than Manchester, and they may have started publicising there sooner because they possibly have problems that we don't have. I think we've bided our time, we've put together a very cohesive story, and when we start promoting that, it'll be something that is totally believable.
Ashley, thanks very much.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna, City Talk 105.9.
Well, earlier on, we were talking to Tony Caldera about some of the challenges that businesses have faced in 2009, particularly with the banking and finance sector. Earlier this week, I called up with Neil Gagan from Business Link Northwest to ask them how they've been assisting businesses through these troubled economic times.
Right, Neil, we're just talking about how the economy is looking for 2010. Obviously, you've had a challenging 12 months with the recession and all that it's brought with it. What's been keeping Business Link busy through 2009?
Well, 2009 was a time for focusing on survive and thrive. That was the heading of some events that we had throughout the year. And if I was honest with you, I'd say we were doing more survive than thrive during that time. Businesses were battening down the hatches, just really reining in the cash spend, looking at making sure that they delivered to their key contracts. We saw volumes tailing off in terms of marketing expenditure and things like that. So I guess people were just looking after their own interests and protecting the cash. We've helped a lot with that part of the business cycle in 2009, and we hosted quite a few events across the region, workshops and the like, and of course our service is tailored exactly to do that for them. So whatever problem they might have, from recruitment right the way through to contract issues or whatever, we're there to help them with all of those things. One of the things we did notice in 2009 was a really difficult time for cash for companies. So we noticed that some companies were experiencing very stretched payment terms from some of their primary customers. So if they were selling into some of the big corporations you see in the Northwest, they were getting 10, maybe 15, sometimes 20 days beyond terms and conditions. This was a real problem for companies in 2009. Historically, and this has always happened, big companies always, you know, take the time paying the bills. But historically what would have happened is those small SMEs that had gone to the local bank manager, knocked on the door and said, we're having a little bit of trouble with large company A or large company B. Are we all right to extend our overdraft facility for a week, 2 weeks, three weeks? To that request, the bank manager would normally say, no problem, as long as they were a valid client and had a track record and, you know, they knew them. All that went out the window in 2009, so the banks really tightened up all of those spurious borrowing type activities, as they describe it. And that put a lot of pressure on personal finance. So a lot of the problems that our clients had, the people who we dealt with, was for the first time the tightening of the belts in terms of financial commitments, and they had to meet them personally. And I think that's a real drain. And you know, we saw some SMEs borrowing from family members or maybe selling some of their own personal assets to keep their businesses afloat. So these guys are heroes. And to have that level of commitment to keep their companies going, I think it's a fantastic thing. And we saw some of that in 2009. Hopefully, things like our access to finance products and some of the help that we gave businesses with accessing new and different cash reserves, if you like, helped through those times. So I think that's one of the key factors of 2009.
Was there part to play for Business Link in terms of negotiating with the banks, or did you simply concentrate and focus on identifying alternative financial opportunities for those companies?
Yeah, for three answers to that. First and foremost, we encouraged the businesses to look to their own control mechanisms and systems to conserve cash. There are some real easy ways to conserve cash and to make sure you're proactive in chasing up your debts, etc., etc., etc. They can deliver some cash inflows that, if you don't do those type of activities normally, will be an additional boost of cash to you. So that could help. And that was okay. That's an easier thing for us to do. The addition to new sources of finance was, I think, very important. And I'd say that it was balanced between that and helping businesses conserve cash themselves that was the main role of Business Link Northwest. However, we did represent our membership and our customers when we were in different regional economic forums where the decisions around what's going to happen with banking and new financial instruments, if you like. We did represent the SMEs of the Northwest in meetings like that. So we did bring whatever pressure we could to bear on the banks. And back to my statement before about days beyond terms, we also tried to bring some pressure on some of the larger organisations who'd perhaps stretched their days, their payment terms a few days beyond what they really should have and what was comfortable for the businesses in the Northwest.
And certainly there was intervention with the public sector, wasn't there? Because
yes.
I know that both Peter Watson, the MD here, and Steve Broomhead at the Development Agency were very upfront about saying public sector agencies have no excuse now. 30-day payment terms should be getting met. And in fact, better than that in some respects.
Well, we at Business Link Northwest, we strive to pay within 10 days. Mm. So we signed up to pay within 10 days of confirmation of the invoice. So it's not 10 days from the date of the invoice. There's still a process for us to go through. But once we've had the approvals that we require to facilitate that through the finance system, we pay in 10 days. And I know that Stephen Broomhead adopted exactly the same policy at the NWD. That's not to say that we always hit the 10 days, but that's something we really strive to do. And that's had some impact in the Northwest. Apparently the public sector spend in the Northwest is somewhere in the region of about £20 billion. Mm. So if you consider that people are moving towards a 10-day payment from what was previously perhaps 30 or 40 days, that should have helped somewhat into put some cash back in the economy. So Business Link's only a tiny proportion of that, of course, but we did our bit.
Yeah. And of course, what people often forget with the public sector is they have a massive number of private sector suppliers. So that is an important initiative.
Absolutely. We source locally wherever possible in our offices here. And yeah, you're quite right. And that could be from items as maybe a local company providing a buffet for a business meeting that we might have. We could be the lifeblood to smaller, you know, SMEs that are in that kind of sector. And we did stationeries the same. We know printing out business cards and letter headings and things like that. Where possible, we try to use local suppliers.
Just going back very briefly to the financial side of things then, access to finance, the banks still seem to be difficult to deal with for an awful lot of SMEs in particular. Do you think over the next 12 months that's likely to change, or is Business Link anticipating a need to continue that level of support? Because I know, I think you've got a full-time team of around 15 people now, haven't you, on access to finance alone?
Yeah, we've established 15 full-time people. So you can imagine that those people are really active in the market and their services are massively demanded. The access to finance route is an interesting concept. As we move into recovery, the finances might be required for different aspects of the commercial enterprise that the SMEs have. So, for example, during the depths of the recession, they may have needed finance just to support their working capital commitments, just to, you know, meet rental payments or wage bills or whatever. as we move into the recovery mode, people still need that access to finance, but perhaps for more creative, business generative activities, things like
so growth
marketing, and it's a focus on growth. So back to survive and thrive, we think the access to finance team will be more to the thrive this side. Yeah. Having said that, are the banks easing off on the requirements? Not noticeably, not noticeably. The banks are putting out a message that says we're open to do business, and that people who qualify for finance will be given finance. But the qualification criteria is a bit more stringent than it was in the past. And I don't blame the banks for doing that either. They've got to be cautious as we come, you know, into the recovery phase of the economic cycle that we're in. So.
Moving, as I say, away from finance then, obviously there has been inevitably a focus on that side of all businesses for the past 12 months. But again, figures released over the last week or so suggest that in the Northwest there's still an awful lot of people that are looking to set their own businesses up.
Yeah.
Enterprise is still seen as a good potential career path. Is there still advice, help and support from BusinessLink for that new business sector?
Absolutely. I mean, that has been one of the key features of the last 12 months. Our target, I'm going to get this wrong, so don't hold me to this absolutely. I think our target is around the 9,000 individuals. We tried to assist 9,000 individuals in starting up a business, and that's from the inquiry phase right the way through to physically starting that business up. So that's our target, to interact with 9,000, and we'll probably do getting close to 20,000 this year, which is a massive increase over the target. To put that into some form of context, our total interaction with the public, with businesses and individuals, is probably getting on for about 120,000, 130,000 a year. So as a proportion of that, that's a huge amount. That's a massive increase from 10 to 20, but it's also a huge proportion of the total pot. So absolutely, definitely, that's one of the key pillars of our organisation. And the website's strong in this, and our broker teams and our advisors are all steeped in experience with starting up businesses, from small concerns to larger spin-offs, etc., etc. So, yeah, definitely something we're interested in.
So what sort of things could you anticipate advising a new business on? Is it every aspect of setting up a business, or are there some very specific things that BusinessLink actually specialise in and can say, come to us for this, this or this?
So one of the key things that BusinessLink has got in its armoury is that we've got 350 people working at BusinessLink now. The frontline staff are 80% of that total headcount, so we've got loads of people on the ground. If you think about the background of these people, we've got from lawyers to accountants to marketing people to product designers to innovation specialists to finance specialists. So we can match the requirements of a new business really, really accurately with somebody who's been there, done it before, and has got some very relative experience in that that situation. I think our skill set, though, if you were to just try and put a ring around it, one of the key attributes to starting business is careful planning, and it wouldn't matter which advisor you saw, they would take you through that, the criticality of having a plan, having a good business plan, having a good relationship with the bank. Some of those really early steps, which sound, when you play them back, sounds simple, but actually the cause of many people moving away from their plans to start up business in the first place. From that, we can go right the way through to the more complex startups. So if we've got a specialist who's got a experience, we've got some chartered accountants, for example, if somebody wants to create a spin-off company or open a new arm of their business or even sell and divest of organisations that they might have, we can help with that as well. So right from the simple stuff to the very, very complicated stuff, but it's open and available to everybody.
And it's a free service.
It is free, absolutely free. We charge for nothing.
So, you know, it's a real valuable asset that people should be tapping into.
Yeah.
And I have to say, over the past 2 years particularly, I've noticed a significant shift in terms of people's perception of BusinessLink. I think the reputation has improved enormously during that time. Is that, do you think, because there are more people involved now who have got those private sector backgrounds and skills that you've spoken about?
That's a great point. My background, I'm from the private sector, for example, and you know, there's a good balance of private and public sector employees within Business Link. We understand the demands of the public sector, but we also are acutely aware of what it takes to run a private organisation. I'm an accountant by qualification. I've been a CFO for companies ranging in size from $250 million out in the States, right the way to small organisations in Birkenhead was one of the places, on Beaufort Road was one of the places that I worked when I first started up. So yeah, there's a, that brings with it a desire to be as commercially astute, as appropriate as possible for that sector. And it cuts out the flannel. When you know your subject matter and you talk to people of the same ilk from the same sector or background, it takes a businessman no time at all to spot a fraud. And you just can't perform if you're not gonna, you know, you're gonna talk the talk, walk the walk, and make sure you deliver. And I think that's why the perception has changed. And also, we work very hard to promote our service now in the Northwest. We listen to advice. You know, we're always open to take constructive criticism from anybody who's in a position to constructively criticise. And I think that's one of the strengths that we bring, and that's the blend of private and public sector, which is, I think, has strengthened us. Yeah, definitely.
Certainly from downtown members' point of view, the credibility of Business Link, as I say, has significantly improved during the past couple of years. We never hesitate now in terms of saying, if you're looking for advice, good, strong advice that you can rely upon, then you'll go to Business Link. And the thing that has really astonished me, to be honest, over the last 12 months is the speed with which that advice comes back.
Yeah.
Because again, you must have been inundated. You quoted some figures before that were phenomenal in terms of the number of people that were spoken to. But again, people can expect quick response, can't they, Neil? They're not going to be sat around a month, 6 weeks waiting for some sort of response back from you. The final point, I suppose, is the obvious one. If I was sat at home now thinking, I need to speak to those guys, how do we get in touch with Business Link Northwest?
Well, we've got extensive websites, and we've got, you may have seen our taxis driving around the streets, and we've got billboards all over the place. We've got an 0845 number that you can call. So basically, just do a quick search online for Business Link Northwest, and that will take you to a very rich website. On that website, lots and lots of contact details. Choose whichever method you need, either, as I mentioned, through the phone line or through an email route, or you may be able to self-serve with the data that's held on the website. So, yeah, get in touch.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
Well, that's it from me, Frank McKenna, and City Talk's business. Thanks to all my guests, Neil Gagan, Ashley Moore and Tony Caldera, and thank you for listening. Have a great weekend, and don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9. Official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm.